Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Marcy Goldblum on behalf of plaintiff appellant Daniel Buchholz. Your Honor, this is a case, the individual, Mr. Buchholz, applied for disability benefits, went through the usual procedure, the administrative law judge denied his case, he appealed to the district court, and now we're here. I'm going to start by talking about the administrative law judge's step 5 decision, which had several flaws in it. To begin with, the administrative law judge found in his decision that this gentleman was limited to essentially sedentary work, but with a what he called a brief sit-stand option every 20-25 minutes. He also limited him to minimal stooping and only occasional bending. Now, when he proposed his hypothetical question to the vocational expert, interestingly, he included a limitation on stooping, but not on bending. And that's important because he also didn't include in the hypothetical question specifics about the exact amount of time that this individual could both sit and stand. That becomes crucial. And Social Security ruling 8312 tells us why that's so important. In an individual, particularly someone who's not in a skilled profession, jobs have ongoing work processes that demand that a worker be in a certain place or posture for at least a certain length of time to accomplish a certain task. So in other words, if this gentleman was getting up every 25 minutes, how long then was he standing? But then it becomes more complicated because the jobs were essentially at a desk or at a table, and they were jobs that were primarily to be performed while sitting. So if this gentleman is performing them during that period of time where he's standing, he has to either be bending or stooping. Well, the judge didn't include a limitation on bending to the vocational expert. The vocational expert might have very well assumed that, well, he could bend over and do those jobs. But then in his findings, the judge recognizes there's also a limitation on bending. So we have this very real question of, well, how is this gentleman supposed to do those jobs? And if, in fact, he's not on task while he's standing, well, how does that satisfy the Social Security ruling 8312? And in fact, it doesn't. But the step 5 finding is even more troubling because once we have this hypothetical question that was posed to the vocational expert comes out with 3 different jobs that this gentleman can do. Now, the government has conceded that the vocational expert was not asked by the administrative law judge if those jobs were consistent with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. And in fact, on cross-examination, the attorney at that time did seem to call into question whether those jobs actually were sedentary. And in fact, there is a big conflict with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. None of those titles actually seem to be consistent. In fact, the government concedes that 19,000 of the 22,000 jobs that were named are consistent with that hypothetical question. The government then tries to resuscitate the decision by saying, okay, but you know, we can go into the Dictionary of Occupational Titles and find some bench assembly jobs that maybe fulfill that. But there's a lot of problems with that. Number one, we have to look at what the judge found, the administrative law judge. At step 5, it's the government's burden to come forward with a significant number of jobs. It's not for attorneys at this level to possibly come up with something that may fulfill it. But then again, it actually didn't, because when you look at what the Dictionary of Occupational Titles says for the most recent job it has in terms of bench, assembler, small parts, that's a light job. It's not sedentary. So for all of those reasons, the government failed to fulfill its burden at step 5 of coming forward with a significant number of jobs Mr. Buchholz could do, and that's even assuming that there weren't other mistakes leading to step 5, which leads us to the credibility. And in this case, the judge did recognize that there's a lot of problems with this gentleman. Back in September of 1998, he was helping someone move some furniture, and he hurt himself. Within a 2-week period, December of 98 and January of 99, he underwent 2 back surgeries. Now, it appears that the back surgeries did correct the herniated disc, and he didn't have recurrence of the herniated disc. But the underlying disc degeneration with radiculopathy secondary to epidural fibrosis, that wasn't remedied. And I think the epidural fibrosis is very important, because the epidural fibrosis, whether it occurred when the disc herniated, whether it occurred during surgery, that's scarring in the nerve root. And the scarring in the nerve root itself can cause pain. Now, the administrative law judge brought up various reasons as to why he wasn't crediting all of Mr. Buchholz's testimony. The most important part of Mr. Buchholz's testimony, I think, is when he says, you know, when I sit, sitting's the worst. Sometimes when I'm sitting, I have to get up and walk around at times. Sometimes even lay down on the floor. But particularly what he's saying is, you know what, when I sit, it gets painful at times and I have to move. And that's very consistent with the record as a whole. We have his treating doctor who finds that in addition to the fibrosis, he identifies muscle spasms as well. In June of 99, record page 175-76, there's muscle spasms. May of 99, record 179, there's muscle spasms. And again, in April of 2001, and that's record at 205 and 06, there's also muscle spasms. So if this guy has the epidural fibrosis, and his doctor on examination is finding muscle spasms, and the administrative law judge, in finding against this gentleman's credibility with regard to that specific testimony, never addresses muscle spasms, never once mentions the epidural fibrosis. And when the magistrate judge recommended that the government's case, that the decision be affirmed, the magistrate judge even noted that there was no one specific piece of evidence that seemed to support the administrative law judge's credibility finding. You know, now recently in Carradine, the Seventh Circuit made it clear that in pain cases, the ALJs have to evaluate the applicant's credibility with great care. And it's our position that that was not done in this case, that the reasons that the ALJ gave for discounting credibility were not adequate. 96, Social Security ruling 96-7P was not followed. And we're going to ask that you remand the case so that an adequate credibility determination can be made, and particularly at step 5, these inconsistencies and conflicts with the DOT can be resolved. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Lipnitz.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ann Lipnitz, and I'm here on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. And we're here today asking the court to affirm the commissioner's decision denying Mr. Buchholz's claim for Social Security disability because it is supported by substantial evidence in the record. Specifically, the ALJ relied upon the plaintiff's treating physician's opinion, which indicated that he could perform a limited range of sedentary work. And in fact, the ALJ's ultimate residual functional capacity finding is consistent with this opinion. It is also consistent with the opinion of the testifying medical expert, who had an opportunity to review all of the medical evidence of record, including plaintiff's diagnoses of epidural fibrosis and the other diagnoses brought forth by plaintiff's counsel, and determined that plaintiff could still perform a limited range of sedentary work. Most significantly, the ALJ's residual functional capacity finding is supported by Mr. Buchholz's demonstrated ability to perform work at the limited sedentary level in a functional capacity evaluation, which was conducted approximately a year and a half after his surgeries. All of these opinions combined provide substantial evidence supporting the administrative law judge's finding in this case. The administrative law judge also considered that the clinical post-operative examination showed few abnormal findings in considering whether or not Mr. Buchholz was experiencing disabling pain. He had normal sensation in the lower extremities, primarily normal reflexes in the lower extremities, and normal strength. In considering plaintiff's subjective complaints, the administrative law judge in this decision very carefully went through the requirements of Social Security Ruling 96-7P and in fact discussed, not only considered, but articulated all of the factors outlined in Social Security Ruling 96-7P. He considered Mr. Buchholz's daily activities, which he reasonably found to be inconsistent with a person experiencing constant pain of a 9 out of a 10 scale, and also considered the inconsistency of his demonstrated ability to perform at the sedentary level in a residual functional capacity evaluation as inconsistent with his complaints. He also considered that although Mr. Buchholz complained of disabling pain, he had no difficulty with concentration and found that to be an inconsistency with someone who would be experiencing disabling pain. Finally, he also considered that there were significant gaps in Mr. Buchholz's treatment history, and also considered that he was not taking medication or using any measures to control his pain. Now, Mr. Buchholz has alleged that those factors should not be used against him because he did not have medical insurance and perhaps could not obtain medical care. However, while those may in fact be true, plaintiff's treating physician opined that he could still perform work at a reduced sedentary level, even with no pain medication, even with no additional treatment, that the residual functional capacity evaluation demonstrated that he could still perform that work even without any medications or additional treatment. Finally, the ALJ also considered Mr. Buchholz's past work history and the fact that he quit his job 3 years prior to his alleged onset date of disability and found that that was a factor weighing negatively in the credibility analysis. In making the finding at step five, the commissioner met its burden in finding that the plaintiff could perform a significant number of jobs despite his impairments. The vocational expert was asked to consider whether a person who could perform simple, unskilled to semi-skilled work, lift up to 10 pounds, sit 6 hours in an 8-hour day, have a brief sit-stand option every 20 to 25 minutes, occasionally climb stairs, do minimal stooping, kneeling, crouching, and crawling, and avoid foot pedals, overhead reaching, unprotected heights, and dangerous moving machinery, could perform any job. The vocational expert answered affirmatively that such a person could perform almost 20,000 jobs in the state of Wisconsin with those limitations. Mr. Buchholz has raised a few objections regarding the Commissioner's Step 5 finding. However, none of those objections warrant reversal. First of all, in discussing whether or not the hypothetical to the vocational expert was adequate, Mr. Buchholz has challenged that the bending restriction was inadequate in the hypothetical question. However, the commissioner responds noting that according to Social Security Ruling 8515, bending incorporates two functions, namely stooping and crouching. The VE was specifically asked about both of those functions and, in fact, was asked about a person who could perform only minimal stooping or crouching. The limitation of the bending was adequately captured in the vocational expert's hypothetical question. Mr. Buchholz has also charged that there's an inconsistency between finding that someone who can bend and stoop minimally could perform a job which allowed him to change positions for approximately 2 hours in the workday would cause him to do more than minimal bending. However, the vocational expert testified, considering both the limitations on the stooping and the crouching and the limitation on the sit-stand option, that there still were significant jobs that could be performed and, in fact, eliminated jobs on an assembly line or things that would perhaps be on a more uniform level for a workspace. With regard to Social Security ruling 004P, Mr. Buchholz is correct that the ALJ did not ask the vocational expert whether or not his testimony was contradicted by information in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. However, despite this, there are a significant number of jobs that were still identified by the vocational expert which are not in conflict with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, and therefore no reversible error was committed in this case. Specifically, we pointed to the fact that the vocational expert testified regarding large categories of jobs which he reduced based on plaintiff's limitations, and specifically he testified regarding bench assembly work, working on small objects such as microphones, and explained any inconsistencies with the Dictionary of Occupational Testimony in finding that the plaintiff could perform a significant number of jobs. Moreover, Mr. Buchholz has conceded that the broad category of factory laborer was not even in the dictionary, or could not find that job in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, so it does not appear that there was any conflict with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, and that stands for 15,000 jobs identified by the vocational expert. If the court has no questions, I would be asking the court to affirm the commissioner's decision finding Mr. Buchholz not disabled. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Goldblum?
I just want to touch on a few points that were made by government counsel. When the administrative law judge was reviewing the credibility in this case, he does note the individual's daily activities. However, if you look at the recitation of those daily activities, they really consist of mostly watching television. And in terms of the treatment, there was no income, there was no insurance, he had food stamps. He had testified earlier and that when he had taken medication in the past, it didn't work, it didn't help. And his treating doctor had said, there's really nothing more we can do for you except, you know, medication and exercise. Well, the exercise made him feel worse, and the medication didn't work. Dr. Thomas, his treating physician, had indicated that this gentleman was limited to standing, sitting, and walking for 15 to 30 minutes at a time throughout an eight-hour workday, which, in fact, does support this gentleman's testimony that he has problems, he has pain, he needs to get up and walk around. That's not just sit-stand, that's get up and walk around. So that's consistent with his testimony, and in finding against his credibility, the judge never addresses that. Counsel suggests that this gentleman quit his job in 1995, 3 years before he became disabled. There's no testimony on that in the record. If the judge thought that it was significant when he stopped working, he should have asked him, and under 96.7P, the judge is required to develop that. This is a gentleman who lived in Durand, Wisconsin, and worked in construction. We don't know what kind of construction projects were going on in the area. He may have been unemployed, not by choice, and again, that's something that was not developed. In terms of the Step 5 findings regarding the jobs, if stooping and bending are indeed pretty much the same thing as counsel suggests, then there would have been no reason for the judge to put both stooping and bending in his decision. Rules of judicial of construction are such that we don't want the word to mean something, and we ask that they be given meaning. Finally, Social Security ruling 004P states that when there's conflict, the judge has an absolute duty to ask about it. In this case, government concedes that wasn't done, and in the government's brief, they acknowledge that at least 19,000 jobs weren't appropriate. We have no basis to find there's a significant number of jobs in this case. Step 5 is the government's burden. This case has to be remanded so that those inconsistencies can be corrected at the proper level. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.